Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast on iTunes on Future Radio in Norwich. My name is Michael Bailey. We are here in Norfolk, the finest county in the world, definitely, to talk about Formula One, the global sport, of course, which has been busy. Well, we've been a little bit quiet, but we've been busy behind the scenes. It's a summer break now, so we have got effectively part one of two parts coming up. We will be reviewing the first half of the season in our following podcast. That will be with you in a matter of days or editing time, whichever takes longest. But before that, we should review the German Grand Prix at Hockenheim, which I think was an interesting occasion. To discuss that, I have Kyle Cumbers, Richard Baxter, and Stephen Rust. So, gents, Hockenheim. Now, I've got to be honest, I'm not very good at this stage of the season. I don't know if it's because work-wise the football is coming in and I get a bit distracted, or it's when I always manage to have my holiday. But Germany, especially Hungary, those races seem to pass me by a little bit. And I just couldn't get enthused about what happened in Germany. Put me in my place. Put me in my place, gents. Come on.
I thought it was a decent Grand Prix. I mean, we've been sport this year with some pretty good ones. So it's better than Hungary. But yeah, it was a 6 out of 10 under it. So, but yeah, I think also we've had four races in July, so sometimes it's a bit too much of one thing. So yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, it is a lot to take in. It's kind of the part of the season which I always almost find dragged slightly, because you've gone past one of my personal highlights, which is Britain. So you've gone past several of the gems, and then you know the summer wreck's coming up, and you just think, oh, but after that we've got Spa, we've got Monza, some of the best, biggest tracks in the world yet to come, and we've got to wait another 3 weeks. It's good to be back in Germany though. It was good. The race wasn't the best, but it was better than some of them we've had this season.
I suppose things are a little bit up in the air, aren't they, from the start of the season, Steve? But they kind of have settled down by this point. So once the break's done, you concentrate on the actual, I guess, what's going to happen next year and the championships, whereas this bit is a bit of a misnomer.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sort of a stepping stone part of the season from where some of the teams start to think about more about next year, and obviously with the big changes and that coming, there's probably, you know, probably more thought going into that. But yeah, I mean, with the sort of the four races in July, for me, most of them have just become one. Just sort of one blur. I mean, the race itself wasn't too bad. I mean, it had some good moments, but probably not one of the best German Grand Prix we've had. But, you know, I think sort of over the whole weekend, it, you know, wasn't too bad.
Well, what they did have, all four races in July, was only one winner. Lewis Hamilton winning all four races in the month. A remarkable achievement. He's turned it completely round on his head. He won in Hockenheim. Lewis, he's now 19 points clear in the Drivers' Championship. Phenomenal effort. And clearly Lewis is sitting there thinking, well, I need as many points as possible for my engine penalties. Yeah, which he thinks. I think he thinks the engine will get to Spa. I think that's the plan, maybe. But he's in such a great position now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to think the start of the season, the misery he was in, finding himself, was it like 47 points behind or something like that? And, you know, so many... The car broke several times on him in qualifying at the start. You know, he made a few mistakes. He was taken out in, I think it was Bahrain, by one of the Williams. So there's quite a lot of things that went wrong for him. But then suddenly, you know, the last month has just looked unstoppable. And in qualifying it hasn't all gone his way either, because Rosberg's still showing his pace. But for some reason, it's kind of turned around a bit. And he's just really got the momentum at the minute.
Well, Rosberg was on pole, of course, in Germany, and then he did what Lewis was doing earlier in the season, which is to completely f*** up his start.
Very, very poor start. He got wheel spin from the rear, but I mean, worst of all, he was overtaken by the Red Bulls. It kind of really ruined his whole race, but there was nothing to say that he couldn't have, you know, possibly have got those two places back and finished alongside Lewis. You know, I mean, if that was the other way around, would we have expected to see a different result? Maybe so.
One of the key moments in the race, is only in terms of Nico Rosberg, was his battle with Max Verstappen. He remarkably did exactly what he did, surely, to Lewis at a very similar corner. This whole idea of, I'm going to force you off the track, oh, and then I'm going to turn in, but there's no track for you to go onto, even though it's a really slow corner. I don't get it. Help me out, Kyle.
It wasn't as bad as the Austrian incident, but he's trying to be aggressive, but it just doesn't suit him.
He can't do it.
No, and people sort of defending him, but there's still a long way to go as he's continuing straight. And you saw there's plenty of overtakes at that corner of the weekend, and everybody done it the same way. He pushed him out wide so they couldn't get counter-attacked into the next corner. But he just doesn't seem to... he just can't do it. I mean, he's very quick, but in them instances, his racecraft isn't quite there, which, unfortunately, I think he needs to win the championship. And because maybe if his racecraft was better, he would have got second, probably. Nice second position, which the sort of points difference would have been single figures still, and still plenty to play for, but momentum is with Lewis, and maybe he's lost it.
Maybe that's why Nico will never win a world championship, which I remember saying once or twice.
Yeah, it was a really funny incident. I mean, the only difference between that and Austria really was that they didn't collide. There was no actual contact between the cars, no damage done. But it was remarkable, the fact that he went in a straight line. If he locked up his wheels or something like that, you could say, okay, at that point it was out of control a bit, obviously missed his braking spot. You could kind of understand what happened. But it was just the fact that he didn't turn. And it's just...
But he did turn, Rich. He was on full lock.
When he said that, I so nearly rewound the TV, paused it, took a picture of his wheels in a straight line and said, Nico Rosberg on full lock. Maybe he's used to drag racing.
Maybe that's how he learned his craft.
He has improved from Austria, because when Verstappen was trying to come on the track, it did allow him a bit more room, which he didn't allow in Austria.
And he didn't break his own front wing. So, he did actually finish, although albeit a long way down.
Maybe he's just trying to find the perfect boundary of where the line is. So
you might have that by the end of the season, yeah.
To be honest, all joking aside, I thought the move was, in some respects, worse than Austria. Because when you saw the onboard replay and he didn't even slightly turn the wheel, he just drove in a straight line towards him. If they had a collider, then we could probably sort of say, well, maybe it was as bad. But in some respects, I think it was worse, because there was no call for it at all. You could see he was trying to do some defensive driving, but it was just useless. It just wasn't even close to that.
And this is, of course, the guy who will be at Mercedes for at least the next 2 years. So there's no getting out of that one. Toto Wolff, I'm sure there is. There's always a way of getting out of these things in a Formula One contract. There was great racing between Rosberg and Daniel Ricciardo early on, though, which was a joy to see. And that probably underlined the fact that Red Bull are proper on it. They are proper competitive. There were a bit of team orders, wasn't there, between Ricciardo Daniel Ricciardo, sorry. I noticed you did that on your own record, Rich. Well done. So they've got two drivers. Listening to Daniel as well recently, he seems to have got his head around the situation he's in, and you're seeing that from his performances as well. He's just starting to reel Max in again a little bit, out-qualified, outperformed him in the race on Sunday. So Daniel's back on it. Max has still got it all going on. The car's quick, the engine's there. And they're now ahead of Ferrari, aren't they, in the Constructors' Championship. So they're kind of proving how competitive they are, and I'm actually quite enjoying it.
It's good to see him back. And where Ferrari, behind the scenes, seem to be messing everything up, you see Red Bull going forward. At certain Grand Prix, I think they'll be pretty competitive. I mean, Singapore's a couple of races away. And there's other tracks, you think they could be there. And if Renault/Tag keep improving, and... I think they're the main contenders for Mercedes now, and as Ferrari seem to be going further and further backwards.
Enjoy how they went about it?
Yeah, I did. There was some good racing on there. I mean, with respects to Red Bull, I mean, that they've seemed to have very quickly progressed forward, in a matter of probably really a quarter of a season. But I sort of read a report the other day that they sort of said that they're still what they estimate to be about 40 brake horsepower behind Mercedes. But I think... I don't know whether Adrian Newey is having more of a work on the car, but you can kind of sort of, parts of that car reminds me of some of their championship winning cars in terms of sort of how a lot of the aerodynamics look and that. So I don't know whether he's having more of a hand, on that side, but they certainly are. I think if that had a Mercedes engine in it, totally different story, but if they catch up with the engine, certainly for next season, I mean, they could be championship winning contenders again.
It's a fantastic point about Adrian Newey, because there's no doubt he wasn't involved in the car 2 years ago, or last season's car, and that was definitely a shortfall, and I'm almost certain that they have rectified that.
Yeah, you know, he's the best in the business at, when it comes to, you know, what he does with the designing of cars and things, and he's done it for years. He always seems to pull something special out. But what I really loved about the two drivers was actually the respect you can see between Ricciardo and Verstappen. Because, like, for example, last season we heard Verstappen with Toro Rosso, you know, I'll let Carlos through, he's on a different strategy. No, was the response. Yet this year, you didn't hear all the radio transmission. But afterwards they said, oh yeah, Max said, I was happy to let him through because he was on a different strategy, gave him a chance. And you see him on the podium hugging each other, tapping each other on the back, and you think that's actually a really good team. Whereas Hamilton and Rosberg, you look at them and they're too busy a lot of the time fighting between each other. And you think they need to watch their backs a lot, because if Red Bull get, you know, a bit of a step ahead where they're, you know, level within the whole race, they're really going to have to work as a team to get the points for the team, not just themselves.
Red Bull are certainly helped out by the dynamic that Max knows he's learning off Daniel. I think that helps. Mm. They're not in the same kind of parallel battle as him and Carlos Sainz were, and I think that probably helps. I think if maybe in a few years' time when Max feels he's bang on it with Daniel, it might be a little bit more lively. Couple of plugs then. Patreon. Get involved. Help us spread the NRF1 word. We have been quiet. I do apologise for that. Partly my fault. Holiday. Ridiculous. Having a holiday during the F1 season. It's the football season's fault. But get involved. Please help us spread the NRF1 word. We've got lots of exciting work that's been going on behind the scenes, and we'll have more on that over this and the next podcast. Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. And of course, get your reviews and ratings of our podcast on iTunes. Help us spread the word via that too. That is nrf1.uk/isonitunes. You're listening to the NRF1 podcast on Future Radio, of course, in Norwich and on iTunes. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. Only one place to start, which is something I feel like I say every week. So might this be Ferrari. Right. There's a lot going on here at the moment, I think. Most of it around Sebastian Vettel. Before we get stuck into what's happening or what happened at Hockenheim, this James Allison has left, and there could be personal issues involved in that, but no one really cleared it up as far as I could tell. His wife died. Terribly sad news. And of course, he wants to look after his family in that way. But Ferrari also let James go, so there's a question about whether they weren't happy with the way things were going and panning out. And indeed, Ferrari seemed like a bit of a mess in terms of a team at the moment. And there's a lot of people who would have been supporting Sebastian Vettel who are leaving or who have left since Seb came in. And I can't help thinking that Seb cuts a figure who doesn't seem particularly driven and happy at Ferrari. And also maybe Ferrari are thinking, well, this guy's not doing what we hoped he'd do when we got him in. Anyone else sensing any of this, or is it just me?
A little bit. I think with Vettel, he sort of very quick, he's a character to me, it seems, that kind of very quickly gets a bit down and sort of wears
bored.
Both of those probably. And probably seems quite happy or maybe oblivious to that he's actually showing that. Whereas, you know, you sort of get other characters like Lewis who tends to try to be more sympathetic towards the team, you know, and not sort of publicly sort of drag them down with him. But I think there's a lot of genuine work going on behind the scenes in Ferrari. I read a report recently that they're actually, most of their efforts at the moment are being spent on 2017, and the other half of it is being spent on 2018. And 2018 is going to be their year. A bit like sort of Mercedes did with 2014, you know, sort of a couple of seasons before that season got started. So I think they're very much sort of dropped off development on this car. I think that's probably why they've just gone backwards a little bit in terms of not keeping up with the pack and just concentrating their resources and efforts on next season and then certainly the one after that, because, I mean, they haven't won a championship since 2007. I mean, it'll be 10 years next year. I mean, there's the most successful team in Formula One in a... still a team really that holds a lot of commercial rights with it, you know, that's sort of important to the sport, and they're largely sort of driving around in semi-podium positions. it's not commercially great in that respect.
Quick question, quick answer. Will Seb still be driving the car in 2018?
Yes.
The reason I think Vettel, of course, went to Ferrari in the first place was partly because of the bit falling out of Red Bull, but also to follow in the footsteps of his hero, Michael Schumacher. Now, if you look at Schumacher, he went there in 94-95, he was at Benetton, and he won the World Championship both those years. Then he went 96-97, 98-99, and then he finally won a championship with Ferrari. I think he had to be patient, he had to build the team up. Okay, you know, he was fighting back in 98-99, he was close, but he still really had to build the team up quite a lot to get to a World Championship winning level. And when they were there, they were unstoppable for about 6 years or so, weren't they? So I think if Vettel just remains patient and works with the team rather than, as we saw with the radio messages going to and from, you know, kind of undermining them and questioning them a lot.
Coming up with his own tyre strategy just from what he could see on the track, which we would, which we love. That's brilliant.
But it did make, that was a very strange decision.
It
was undercut Verstappen. It was 10 seconds down the road. I mean, how the hell are you going to do that?
He had no, well, yeah, in terms of the teams, yeah.
But that just made no sense. And you can understand why Vettel went, so what? Who are we trying to undercut? And you're like, the back markers? What was the idea behind it? And yeah, I think with James Allison leaving, he was then probably having an impact on the car and design team. And they're going to bring somebody else in, and they want to have their own impact and where they want to work and blah blah blah. And I think they're just going to end up being the second, third quickest teams for a while. And kind of Alonso said that a little while ago. They sort of, but they've probably got the budget to be where they are, but they're not maximising that budget. And they've kind of also the driver lineup. You know, that needed a bit of a freshen up. We've seen what Verstappen's done to Red Bull, and yeah, I think if I was a young driver, I'd rather be at somewhere like McLaren. Well, you can actually see them going forward, and at the moment I can see Ferrari just staying where they are.
Well, don't forget, Ron Dennis believes that McLaren will be the next team to win a title after Mercedes. Carl just turned his nose up at that. But it's interesting, again, what you basically want is stability behind the scenes and then maybe a brave approach in terms of their drivers, and what we're actually getting is complete instability behind the scenes and a stagnant driver lineup.
It was since what Vettel's been there, he's probably had a new chairman of Fiat Group Ferrari, and then you've had a new team principal, a new chief designer. That's all, yeah, all happening behind the scenes, and where they are now for them reasons.
So talking about drivers who get down and maybe are now very down, Daniil Kvyat at Toro Rosso. I mean, he basically came out with it, didn't he? Say it's just not working, can't get the car working, team aren't really helping, they don't get me, this shit. I mean, like, if you could have translated it, that's probably what he would have said. Where do we? It feels like this is going to end this season for Daniel in Formula One.
I felt so sorry for him. I sat there saying, "But poor guy, he's 21 or something like that, isn't he?" And you think to be in that position at Red Bull, you know, on the podium one week and then making what to him was an honest mistake the following week in Russia, and it's like then to lose your drive because of that. It was just like, that's at the age of 21, that's hard to take. But I mean, the positive I would say is if he's dropped for next season, just look at Romain Grosjean. He was brought in 2008. He didn't really do any good with Renault. He left for a couple of seasons, went back to what he knew he was good at, and then he came back into Formula One. I think that was when they were Lotus again, and he was doing well, and he's improved since, and he's not been, well, okay, had his a few shunts after a while, but you know, if Kvyat can kind of use that as a model, you know, let's go away, let's get back to doing what I do best and come back into it if needed to, but I hope he will get a drive somewhere because he's definitely got talent.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's never over for a Formula One driver in this day and age, as long as you're still sort of fairly young and have had some success
and you've got some money behind you.
There is that, you know, you think how many sort of the midfield teams and particularly lower teams they've chopped and changed with drivers, you know, even sometimes throughout one season, let alone between, you know, one season to the last. So I don't think it's always completely over, even if he loses his seat this season, which I don't think he will. I'd be pretty confident that he'd be driving for Toro Rosso next year. I think it's just something that just needs a little more work, really. But I think his kind of probably confidence really was knocked with Red Bull's fairly sort of cutthroat decision, really, but that's probably the nature of modern Formula One, really, isn't it? I mean, that they run that sister team, you know, with bringing the drivers up from there. And I mean, we were all pretty aware that there were plenty of teams were sniffing around Verstappen, and they just didn't want to lose that hot prospect for the future, and he fell foul of that. So
let's move it on, shall we, to McLaren. It's a bit of excitement around McLaren. Yeah, Fernando Alonso is in. Rich is nodding. I like that. I mean, Fernando Alonso is getting quite excited. He's quite chippy on the radio. I like that. We had a lot of stuff going on at the end of the race with Alonso and Bottas on presumably rims, I think was the word. Jenson Button, an excellent performance for him to finish P8, I think it was, wasn't it? And of course, a slight upping in the speculation that he might end up at Williams next year. But yeah, McLaren, Rich.
It's been impressive, to be honest, from where they were last season. Even the start of this season, they're not really up there that well. But I mean, they're looking more like the team who are getting 7th and 8th and seem to really be competing with Williams and Force India, as, you know, for example, in Germany, actually finishing ahead. That's been impressive for them. And seeing that kind of performance, and the driver with Alonso, they said to him, you know, oh, so-and-so is this many seconds up the road. And he's like, no problem, I got it, or something like that. And it's just like, wow, that's the confidence he's now got in the car and his own ability again. And you think, maybe next season, after what Ron Dennis said, that's the first time I thought, actually, if they've managed to progress that much, with, you know, a bit of luck, they might have a shot.
It would be brilliant, because I think they've been desperately missed, to be honest, a proper competitive McLaren. And a former McLaren driver, Kevin Magnussen, he pulled off a nice overtake on Felipe Massa. At one point, not that Renault have got much to shout about really, but they kind of been quite open about the losses they've made, certainly last year when they were Lotus, God rest their souls. And you know, they have got a couple of decent drivers there, haven't they, at Renault, and you'd like to think that they can maybe turn that around. Maybe they'll have James Allison back on the book soon, you never know.
That'd be a really good appointment for them. I think they're heavily recruiting at the moment, because I think losses.
Well, they lost everyone, didn't they? That's the thing, they lost everyone. They were cutting them all at Enstone.
So that would be, yeah, that'd be great if they could get him back. I do worry, slightly worry about Renault's sort of the amount of investment they're putting in, because they're still having, like, Friday FP1 drivers. And so, I mean, it's fair enough, you know, giving young drivers a chance. But that does slightly worry me.
It's also a revenue stream.
Yeah. But I think maybe next year they could, certainly Jenson Button going to Williams, but would Jenson Button at Renault be quite a good appointment, sort of experience, the way to help them along? And yeah, I think maybe not be a bad shout. But
you heard it here first. I'm sure they'll be speaking to him if they can.
But who would you drop?
I probably would drop Palmer.
Ah, he's an Ipswich fan, that's fine. Sorry, Julian. It's ruthless, this Formula One business. Right, okay, well, you are listening to the NRF1 podcast here on Future Radio and of course on iTunes. It's time for our Of the Weekends in Germany, Deutschland. Who was not a douchebag? I'm sorry, I reused my pun there. Who was our Rodolfo Gonzalez driver of the weekend? Who wants to pitch someone? Anyone?
Ricciardo.
Like it?
Just simply for being brave enough to drink champagne out of your shoe.
Yeah, it's a very Australian thing, apparently, I think.
I thought it was revolting.
Apparently it made it smell better.
I wouldn't want to drink one out of a new one I've just brought out of a shop, let alone one I've had my sweaty feet in for like 60 odd laps.
I like this. Steve's getting angry about the shoe drinking. This is what it takes. I mean, I've got written here Jensen and Alonso, because I was quite excited by what the McLarens did, but Lewis,
the Hulk, he finished 7th, sort of the best of the rest from the 3 big teams at the moment. So
Le Mans winner Nico, yes. Hülkenberg,
his home Grand Prix. He's sort of not a great season, so yeah, it was a decent Grand Prix for him.
I like that. Team of the weekend?
Red Bull.
Yeah, solid performance, really.
I think, yeah.
For beating the or splitting the Mercedes, really, either way. And probably driver of the weekend, to be honest, I'd go for Verstappen. Good solid drive and beat a Mercedes.
And on the podium, remarkably, we seem to just be taking this for granted. I mean, he's getting further and further away from Jos's tally by a rapid rate of knots. Pastor of the weekend. Go on, Rich, you like this one.
I'm going to say Mercedes, the stopwatch man.
Oh, yes.
5 seconds, 8 seconds. in Formula One.
What does it matter? 3 seconds in Formula One.
That's a whole pit stop.
It is actually.
It was. They could have picked him up, changed the wheels, put him down again, picked him up again, changed the wheels again, put him down, and that would have been quicker than that extra 8 seconds that they added on. It's how difficult is it to count 5 seconds?
Fair play as well for them actually saying that, because you think about a couple of years ago, Red Bull wouldn't tell you what had gone wrong with the car, even though it was out and it was over. And now you have Toto Wolff going, well, yeah, we had a problem with the stopwatch.
And I think it says the stopwatch, it didn't start on zero or something like that. And it's like, we'll just count five, the numbers go up. And then it doesn't matter, because on the screens they have, surely it has the race time that goes on. So you can just count the seconds on that.
Also, you never back up stopwatch as well, won't you? You have two people doing it just to cover yourself.
I mean, to me, it seems strange that it's the teams who get to do it by a stopwatch. It's like, what if you just cut a couple of tenths off? Because you would, wouldn't you?
Actually, they must. FIA must monitor.
If it's that technical that they can check, why leave it to a guy with a stopwatch and the pit stop? But just remarkable. I mean, Nico, if I was him, would be like, what the hell? Oh, yeah, great shout. Well, I'm not going to argue that. That's a great shout. Anyone else?
I've got a different one.
Go on.
Anthony Davidson.
Oh.
For his analysis on the Rosberg Verstappen incident. Did anyone watch that before I go into that?
Yes.
I can't understand what he's on about, but...
Well, the thing is he showed the furthest sort of viewpoint from the camera to start with, and he zoomed in on the Rosberg steering wheel and said, there you go, you can see that he's turning on, he's on full lock, and he's kind of like lost control of the car, there's nothing he can do about it. And then he went to the onboard, and you can clearly see that the steering wheel didn't turn, which we already discussed. And then he just basically said, there you go, you can see that he's turning the steering wheel. I was like, how can you say that? You can see he made no effort to turn the steering wheel.
That's because he's normally quite good at it.
That's the thing. He's usually really good at his analysis. He's been a Formula One driver as well. I just sort of think, what are you doing?
Just be careful, because he was an ex-Mercedes employee, wasn't he?
What are you saying, Kyle?
Well, maybe he has to be a bit careful, because in the Austrian incident, he was quite damning of Rosberg. And I don't know if he still is a simulator driver for them or not.
I love that, but
I'm just wondering if he...
Of course, because you think of how much they pay him to do that and how many other people could do it.
Exactly, because I know he lives in Brackley.
He lives in Brackley. Yeah. I mean, that's enough.
And he was a simulator driver. I wouldn't let
him back home.
So he may have to be careful.
Spot on, Kyle.
I will just add, on behalf of Ped, because he's not currently here, Anthony Davidson, rather see him in Formula One than Pastor Malden.
he was a future champion. He was Anthony Davidson.
So what happened?
He had no money.
None of us have got any money. Deal with it. Brilliant stuff. Highlight of the weekend, I mean, the Rosberg Ricciardo racing early on was good. I think we've mentioned a lot of the other ones. I thought the quality of the onboard shots, I don't know what they've done to the onboard cameras, but they seem to be crisp as anything now, and they've changed the position.
That was, to be honest, I noticed that further back in the season. I don't know whether it was something they brought in last year or whether it was something I've only just noticed, but or whether they have brought in changes, but that does seem to be really, really good.
Off the start, Max Verstappen ahead of Rosberg, he had all the sparks, he was so clear. Brilliant work, whoever's done that. Well done. Anyway, any other highlights anyone has?
Well, everybody on the podium being happy was quite a highlight. It's been a good while.
In the green room as well. There was. You could actually generally see that there was no tenseness at all. Yeah, they were all talking, and it was not like one had a back to each other and they would just talk to the other, and it was...
So it's all Nico's fault, is basically what we're saying then.
Well, yes.
I love it.
I think just the overall quality of the overtakes we saw. Verstappen around the outside of turn one and Ricciardo was incredible, and then as you said, Rosberg and Daniel, I'm going to say, because I can't really say it. Rosberg and Daniel, they're towards the end of that for the stadium section, they were side by side for about 3 or 4 corners, and you think that's what you want from your racetracks, is to have those cars where they can stay side by side for that long and actually have a real battle for position. And that was just incredible to watch, and at the time you just like, oh, who's going to come out on top? And it was thrilling to watch.
Brilliant stuff, and we'll have more on the pronunciations debate in our next podcast, which will follow shortly. But we're going to wrap that up now. Gents, thank you so much. Kyle, Rich, Steve, thank you to all you for listening. We really appreciate it. A few plugs. There will be blogs on the website, nrf1.uk, over the summer break. I will write one. I promise I'm actually going to do that. Rich has written one that probably needs a bit of updating, because you may remember from a few weeks ago. Yeah, still didn't put it up. So we'll do that and get a few bits and bobs up online. Get a hold of us on either our Twitter or Facebook pages. Now, the handle for both of those is at the NRF1. So Twitter is at the NRF1, facebook.com/ the NRF1. I've not gone really posh. And yeah, at the NRF1 will get you through to both of those pages. And of course, you can email us to get in touch, because we love hearing from you. We've had some lovely emails recently. That is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We have our half-season review coming up, Prediction League update, all the latest Formula One news. That's going to be in our next podcast, which will follow shortly. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy race day. You're here with me, Rich, for the start of the German Grand Prix back at Hockenheim. It's good to be there. Pretty good circuit. It's quite interesting. The cars are just lined up on the grid now and just waiting for the lights to come on. So, taking a little bit of time, but here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lights on. And go, go, go. Oh, and it's very even start. Oh, Hamilton's in lead. Rosberg's dropped right back up. Both Red Bulls are ahead of Rosberg. And, oh, the Red Bulls really close to hitting each other there. I think one of them went, I think, Verstappen around the outside, and there's cars wide in the back. I couldn't see if there was collisions. Oh, no. Now Rosberg's looking to get through, and, oh, Williams locks up, and, oh, it nearly hits Ferrari. They all got through cleanly, though, by the looks of things. Rosberg's dropped back to fourth, I think it is now, maybe fifth. Yeah, it is fourth. Two Ferraris just behind Rosberg fighting for position as they're heading round up to the hairpin. Hamilton's got a good start. Oh, and Rosberg's very wide there. He was trying to get around the Red Bull, and he ended up going on the grass. And now the Ferrari's looking to get around the outside of him. There could be some collisions here. It's a very tight hairpin. I think they've all got through. One of the McLarens runs a little wide. But it's looking like a decent start. Now Rosberg is having a look up the inside of Red Bull. He's not going to get through there. No, he doesn't do it. Oh, but can he get around the outside? He's got more grip. But the Ferrari's looking to get up the inside. This is ridiculous. The closest racing we've seen all season. And a poor start from Rosberg, and he's possibly cost himself this race. Hamilton's well clear in the lead. Verstappen second. Ricciardo is third. And these two Ferraris are all crawling over the back of Rosberg. They're trying to get past. But it's all kind of settled down a bit now. I don't think there was any collisions I could see of any massive major sort. And it seems they've all got through safely. And, wow, 67 laps of this, and already the first lap has been brilliant. Wow, what a race this is going to be.